You're listening to JerryPark.com, the Coliseum of Combat Sports.
He is a UFC and Arizona State University Hall of Famer, a multiple-time Ultimate Fighting Championship tournament winner, a former WEC Super Heavyweight Champion, and NWA Heavyweight Champion. He is a mixed martial arts pioneer and living legend that is still going strong today. Residents, please welcome Dan the Beast Severin to the park. Dan, what's going on, my man?
Well, I'll tell you what, not too much, Ariel. Or I should say maybe too much to mention all in one breath. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk to a lot of people on a daily basis, and I'm just thinking, how am I going to fit talking to Dan Severin? So much to talk to you about in a span of 15 to 20 minutes, but we'll try to cover it all. And like I said, okay. You're still going strong today. You know, this living legend that one of the men credited for putting the UFC on the map way back when, and at 40-something years young, still going strong. Just had a show in Northern Ireland, I understand. How did that go?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I just got back from Belfast just late Monday night.
And how'd that go?
I just started back then. Well, I tell you what, it wasn't going good for me for a while out there. I mean, it's probably one of the very few times I've ever been kind of knocked right on my can. And that's one of those things where I never even saw it coming, but all I know is as my TV screen, meaning my eyeballs, are coming focused back in, I'm realizing I'm on my can. I got a guy that's moving in, and I'm thinking I gotta protect myself. I got to close the distance or create some space, one or the other right there. And he nailed me a second time, and then I just was trying to scramble just to get a hold of something right there. And somehow I did get a hold of his leg, and it ended up taking a couple more shots, but more like just body type of shots, and then took him down and just rolled out like the last 15-20 seconds of that round. And I needed that end of that round, otherwise it could have been a bad situation for myself right there. But you know, from the he ended up winning the first round, and then the second and third round I ended up dominating, so I ended up winning the match.
So I have to ask you, you've had over 100 fights in MMA, and that's the ones that have just been recorded. Who knows how many other fights you've had? At your age and at this juncture in your life, and you have so many other things going on in your life. Why keep going in there? Why keep putting your body through that punishment?
Well, I mean, it's the reality is I know that I'll be turning 50 here shortly, and that I'm not the same war dog I once was. I am basically have been kind of like the last couple of years been thinking out more and more like on what kind of a note do I want to depart from the aspect of competition. You know, I mean, it's just kind of like, well, is there a magical number of matches? I'm thinking, well, I don't know, somewhere around that 100 and, I don't know, close to 120, 125. But I mean, again, that's again what I've kind of slowly come up with. I got a few more years to go through here yet. I've been going to my daily planners because full contact fighters, sure dogs, stuff like that, have contacted me on a few different occasions to find out how many matches do I have. And I said, well, I'll quickly ballpark it for you. But I says, I do have pretty good accountability by going back to all my yearly daily planners and that. So that really hasn't been a real big priority because I do keep quite busy. But I'm looking for that. A note to depart on. Is it a magical number of matches? No, I've got quite a few. I mean, especially for someone who started so late in life in the first place. Most would have retired. I was 36, just getting ready to turn 37 years of age when I started back in 94. And, I like last year, I had 10 matches. And, I've got another couple matches still already scheduled. And a few other couple that are trying to romance me right now. For some matches, so I don't know if it's going to be some kind of a magical number of matches, if it's going to be a number of belts. I mean, the world record was 7 title belts. Well, I have 18 title belts, so I've kind of blown that out of the water, and it's kind of like, well, maybe I'll just call back some of these guys that I have losses to. I'll either title it like the No Regrets, One Last to the Dance in the Cage type of a tour, or they'll just put a big pair of red ruby lips on the back of my trunks, just call it the Kiss My Ass Tour or something like that. I don't know. I just haven't quite figured that one out yet.
Well, okay, so let's say I actually like the concept of someone who you think that you'd like to avenge a loss to, or one a particular opponent that you thought brought the best out in you, as opposed to the number, just because, you know, like you said, who knows exactly what that number is in terms of how many fights you've had. So let's just say you're going with the opponent. If there's one guy out there that you'd like to end it with in the cage or in a ring against, who would it be?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's again, as I think of just people that I've had losses to. I mean, you know, well, for example, I use like Ken Shamrock. I mean, he beat me the first time. I beat him the second time. So realistically, there could be a rubber match there. I have a loss against Royce Gracie. My first loss. I thought, well, maybe that would be the note, is that was my first loss ever. Maybe finish out my career. Let that be one of my last matches, because you know, putting in perspective, when I went into my very first UFC, I only trained for 5 days. And in those 5 days, I only trained about an hour and a half a day with three individuals in a professional wrestling ring with a pair of old beat-up boxing gloves, and the name of the game was a punch. Dan, well, Dan doesn't like to be punched, so I simply would just parry around, deflect their strikes, would either get the standing clinches or takedowns, slap on an amateur wrestling move, and turned a little bit illegal and made him scream and squawk, and that was my training camp. So I never trained a single submission. I never really trained a single strike, and ended up, that match kind of set a lot of precedent in terms of the average match was 2 minutes, 22 seconds. I think the longest match on record at that time was 4 minutes, and here we went just shy of 16 minutes. So it really blew a lot of people away. And I kept thinking I had too much of a heart at that point in time in terms of, you know, I couldn't really throw a strike straight down into someone's face. I mean, I was torn with my conscience, and I had to really think about that. And even then, I just was throwing peripheral type strikes, just trying to make life miserable, but you know, not really wanting to inflict any kind of real injury there whatsoever. So, I mean, again, that's just, again, just giving you a couple different examples of some losses that are there.
Well, earlier
that,
you mentioned
would be some individuals that might be worthy of making that a final note match.
Earlier you mentioned Ken Shamrock, and you probably better than anyone would sort of understand what he's going through right now. I know you were fighting at the time of his bout on Saturday, but I'm sure by now you've heard that not his best performance against Buzz Berry at the Cage Rage show. What kind of advice would you give Ken as he's sort of at this crossroads of his career at this point?
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, we share some common ground. I'm older than what Ken is, but you know, the tough part is that, you know, whether it's advice just to Ken or just in general speaking, almost all sporting events have a master's type division, or this absolute type of division. And I think you'll see that eventually come about, where if you win your weight class, I'm talking about in two different levels. If you win your weight class and you can throw in this this open weight categories, to where you now might have a 150-pound fighter going against a 205-pounder, for example. I think you see that, some of the states would not allow this because they'll say it's too much of a weight difference. But as I said earlier, you see this in almost any type of martial arts already. It will eventually happen. I think there could be a master's division or a legend division, where now if you have, there's a number of these mixed martial arts guys that are 40 years and above now. So now you could have matches of Don Fry versus Ken Shamrock versus a Randy Couture versus a Marco Huas versus a Steve Jenham versus Keith Hackney. I mean, these are guys that have all have done something in the Ultimate Fighting Championships. They've either been champions or runner-ups or things of that nature, or have made a great impression.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Masters, a Masters division. Yama Pit Fighting, which is the new organization from the former, I guess you could say, the head honcho of the UFC, Bob Meyerowitz, is coming up just a couple of months down the road. Right now, you're not on that original card or that inaugural card. Have they contacted you about fighting for them?
Well, they had contacted me. I am aware of their show coming up. I already had commitments for that same weekend already, and I try to fulfill my obligations. But it's something that I'm glad it's happening. And the Bob Meyerowitz and the Semaphore Entertainment Group, they were with the Ultimate Fighting Championships from the very beginning, and I think they'll do an excellent job. I know it has a rather unusual name. I'm not sure what the name means, or in the fact that they're going to be using a little bit different type of of a ring or matted surface. I haven't found out quite all the particulars onto it, but I believe
you're not alone on that front.
What's that?
You're not alone. No one seems to know what the heck that thing is, but yeah.
Well, but I think that the Legends match that's going to be featured that night is Don Fry versus Oleg Taktarov.
Right.
So yeah, I'm aware of what's taking place on that event there, and I'm hoping that there is a lot of success with that.
When you first you talk about Bob Myritz and all these guys and sort of the legends that put the UFC on the map prior to all the issues that happened with them getting off of pay-per-view and all that, and you made your debut at UFC 4. Now we're about to head into UFC 83. Honestly, did you think that this sport would grow into some call it the fastest growing sport in the world. I'm not really sure how you measure that, but no doubt that it's as popular as it's ever been. CBS now on board, Spike TV doing everything that they do. Did you really ever imagine that it would reach the level to where people can think that it would overtake boxing in terms of the number one combat sports that fans would like to watch? Or did you think that, you know, there'd be this nice little niche audience for it, it'll always be around, but kind of never hit the mainstream?
Well, when I saw the first two UFCs, I mean, I was at the time I was living, where I still do, at Coldwater, Michigan, a rather rural community, and we did not have pay-per-view capabilities, so I didn't even know the UFC even existed. A friend of mine out of Detroit watched the first two shows, videotaped them, and then showed them to me and says, hey, you ought to think about doing this. And I'm watching this, I'm seeing people get kicked in the face, stomped on and stuff like that. I think, you know, these are not exactly skills that I possess. And he said, yeah, but look at this skinny little guy doing this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Of course, he was referring to Royce Gracie at the time. And did I know what Jiu-Jitsu was? No. And I'm looking at it, I said, well, it kind of looks like wrestling to me. And I said, I guess if they're close enough to throw a punch or a kick, I they're actually close enough for me to then grab a hold of them. I think, well, in theory, I could either stay just outside of that range or close the distance quick enough to where I can get to that clinch or takedown, and that should take away probably 90%+ of their arsenal. So, I mean, that was the theory that I was going with, and still quite a bit of the same theories that I still base a lot of my matches on, even to this day. And it, you know, getting back to actual answering that question, it was a very addicting type of sport to watch. Even I know as I would be showing this stuff to other people in the beginning, they'd be like, oh, you know, I'm in a real hurry here, Dan. Maybe I can watch it for just a minute or two. Well, an hour later, they're still there and they're glued to the seat. Or while they're not glued to the seat, they're standing up and their body's contorting and twisting, and they're almost like mimicking the match as it's turning out. And that's what I've noticed, that because of the activity level and excitement level, it drew people in. So I knew that there was a product there, but, you know, as you said earlier, Bob Myritz kind of was holding the Ultimate Fighting Championships company during probably its bleakest period of time, when you had Senator John McCain and other politicians and athletic commissioners that were coming down upon the sport and trying to get it banned altogether. So, you know, concessions had to be made, and you know, now no holds barred has no longer exists, and this new product, mixed martial arts, has emerged.
Yeah, I wonder when a guy such as yourself hears that Elite XC is now going to be televised on CBS, and you see guys like Brock Lesnar making a couple hundred thousand for a fight. You were there from the beginning, and I mean, I don't think I'll be breaking any news in thinking that you didn't earn as much as he did for his fight.
I'll tell you point blank, my guarantee walking out there for my very first UFC ever was $1,000.
Wow. So what do you
think? And for $1,000, I signed a contract that stated in black and white, in the event of your accidental death, they're not liable.
Jeez. So what do you think there when you see Brock Lesnar getting paid, you know, $250,000 for 90 seconds? Is that maybe the reason why you keep going, hoping to, you know, get a piece of the pie?
No, not really. I mean, the inevitability is you can take any sport, take football, take basketball, baseball, and you can go back 10 years, see what these athletes were making 10 years ago, and look at what they're making today. you know, salaries have increased, sponsorships have increased, viewerships have increased. So I mean, it's just the inevitability. I mean, the cycle, it will continue. A year from now, you know, that could be just pittance, and I think it will be as more and more of the mixed martial arts product does go mainstream. The more companies that you have doing well, you know, the bottom line, the athletes will profit from this.
Right.
You know.
So it doesn't bother you at all seeing that? I mean, you kind of take it as you had your time and now it's their time to shine?
Yeah, I mean, every athlete only has so much shelf life. I mean, the thing is that I've gotten a lot more shelf life than than anybody else so far. You know, but like you said in the very beginning, I'm still out there doing things. It's not like I've rolled off into the sunset here yet. I mean, you know, I will probably in the next year or two, I probably will leave the competition arena of mixed martial arts. I won't leave competition yet. I won't leave the world of mixed martial arts. I'll still be involved in mixed martial arts in some capacity, whether it be, you know, I've kind of been dubbed the international ambassador for mixed martial arts, you know, wherever I go, because I do a lot of interviews. I talk to people about, you know, not only just the mindset and preparation, but a lot of the mixed martial arts athletes, they have a lot of other things going on for them. There used to be an old stereotype of what a fighter was kind of like, and, you know, the mixed martial arts athlete has kind of broken that mold.
Are you still a fan of the sport? I mean, will you watch the pay-per-views and the events on Spike TV and all that?
I don't really watch a lot of television in general. I will watch certain select matches. I do a lot of reading on the sport. I do get a number of, like, you know, when you're asking about the match which just happened with Ken and stuff like that, I probably had half a dozen different emails that had already come in, and so I already knew the results.
Right.
You know, and that'd be something that, yeah, I wouldn't mind watching that particular matchup for that, because I have fought Cannon on a couple occasions and I fought Buzzberry myself.
Really, and I got to tell you, you're not really missing much if you don't ever choose to watch that fight. It was not nothing to put on the highlight reel. Maybe for Buzzberry, I know, and you know, give him all the credit in the world. He still had to defeat, but this was a shell of Ken Shamrock's former self. But when you watch, you know, the UFC now, and you even see like the Elite XC and their presentation of MMA, do you like the way the sport is being, you know, packaged to the masses?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, I hate to say this, but, you know, most of the market is being packaged to Americans, and Americans as a whole have short attention spans. So, you know, they have to, it's a combination of like a lot of razzmatazz, you know, with the promos cutting, just the entrances and the things of that nature. It's almost like a show within a show. And, you know, bottom line is the matches have got to either live or die on their own merit. Yeah, I still think that some rules I'm not real crazy about, and other rules they're necessity.
What's the one rule that you're not too crazy about? Because you think about when you competed, I mean, a lot less rules back then. So I'm curious to know which is a rule now that you don't like.
Well, I mean, if you talked about, yeah, I mean, well, just for the listeners that are not familiar, because most people really only know about the Ultimate Fighting Championships as of January 2005 forward.
Right.
And that's when, you know, Spike TV started airing the Ultimate Fighter show. And they're just incredible viewership. I mean, even just on hits on my own website, what it just grew to from that point forward. A lot of them, they have never even heard the term no holds barred. They just know of all these current athletes. I mean, just recently that, you know, Mark Coleman was just a name to the UFC Hall of Fame as well.
Right.
You know, I still think that if they just bring back one person per pay-per-view, give him 1 or 2 minutes of his fame in the sunshine there. Just say, you know, I'd like to bring back one of our former no holds barred fighters. For example, I'll just use Keith Hackney, the Giant Killer. That was what he came with as a title. And as they say, let's welcome Keith Hackney to the Octagon. As he's walking to the Octagon, just show some clips. It's kind of like what they do for WWE, mm-hmm. for Fresh Wrestling. They have the big screen, and it's rolling and showing some highlights of this, that, and whole nine yards. And by the time he gets into the octagon or so, you know, just say, let's give a big standing ovation to one of the legends of our no-holds-barred era, Keith Hackney, for being one of the pioneers that helped the sport to grow on to what it is to this day. And just that whole thing would have probably taken maybe 2 to 3 minutes tops.
You'd like to see some recognition of the past and the guys who kind of made the sport
into
what
it is today. Well, yeah, the guys that, because the no-holds-barred era is gone. It won't be repeated. You know, so it's something that you should at least let people know that these are the guys, the Oleg Viktorovs, the Don Fries, the Marco Huas, the Oleg. I mean, they're just, these are the guys that pushed this sport forward. You know, it's not, a lot of people still just give credit only to a few individuals. And that's quite wrong, because, you know, those individuals, they had a part of this history making. Yes, like Dan said, I had a part of this, but, you know, it took more than just those couple people. And it's like coming back and recognizing, you know, a Steve Jenham. I mean, the guy was an alternate and was, it was a match where Hoist Gracie is to draw a blank right now, the gentleman from Canada here right now, in the finals. But Hoist had just had a match with Kimo Leopoldo in a semifinal. And it had taken such a physical toll that as Hoist out there, he simply just throws his corner man just throws a towel in before the match ever began. So all of a sudden, there's no finals match in this tournament format. Steve Jenham is out in the parking lot, and someone actually has to find him in the parking lot. He's got to come back into the building, dress out, do like about a 1 minute warm up, and climb out into the octagon to face his opponent, and ends up winning. Yeah. You know,
I'm sure. Yeah,
so some people would be interested in knowing, like, wow, that's unreal.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of great stories, and you mentioned WWE. They've done some great documentaries and things like that. I think a lot of fans would love to see, you know, little DVDs or specials about the, you know, those early days of the UFC. And you mentioned Mark Coleman. He's now coming back to the UFC to face Brock Lesnar. I'm sure this would be one of those bouts that you'd be interested in seeing, just because, I mean, A, you fought Mark Coleman before, and Brock Lesnar, with his wrestling background, I'm sure that's someone that you have your eye on. What are your thoughts on Coleman returning? And I'd love to hear your take on who you think would win that bout.
Well, it's going to be an interesting match right there. I mean, because both of them share a lot of the same background. I mean, they're both wrestlers. Mark from Ohio State and Brock Lesnar from Minnesota University. They've both done well on the amateur wrestling level. That you know, Brock is just really entering his MMA career. Mark's been around there for a while. I think age factors. Be a consideration. I do believe that the power that Brock Lesnar brings to the game is going to be something that Mark's going to have to contend with as well. I mean, I think for stand-up striking ability, I'll give it to Mark right there. But I mean, mixed martial arts is everything being thrown in there. I mean, I keep referring to it as a physical chess match where checkmate hurts sometimes a lot. So that'll be definitely one of those matches that I will be watching, just to see what does emerge from that. And a lot of it is that mental mindset. There's a lot of guys that they might have better physical preparation to fight that, but they may lack the mindset. You know, that's one of the things that I bring to the table is my mental mindset. I mean, it's I don't train nowhere near what I once did there, but I still have this mindset. That's why I think that's the only reason what even carried me through. Just this past Sunday, you know, in Belfast, Ireland, right there, because like when I was rocked and stuff like that, now I'm trying to get my faculties here, you know, I'm scrambling to do this or that, but it's kind of like, you know, it's like I could have taken a lot of unnecessary punishment in the process right there, and then I did take probably a few too many shots, but I was still able to get to that, get that clinch, get my faculties, and then continue on.
Isn't it amazing to see some 15 years after you debuted, and all these wrestlers now? I mean, there was just an article in the Washington Post saying that close to 15% of high school wrestling teams, they've seen a rise in kids wanting to sign up, and a lot of them credit the UFC as the reason why they're interested in the sport. And you have guys like Lesnar, you have guys like Johnny Hendricks, Jake Roshall, these former All-Americans in college now having a place to go. And you know, back then when you started out, there was a place, but it was definitely not, you know, when you see the UFC now on cable television and soon broadcast television and doing everything they do on pay-per-view, there's a lot more incentive for these guys to try it out as opposed to going into pro wrestling. Kurt Angle has said many times that if the UFC was as popular as it is today, he would have chosen MMA over wrestling. How does that make you feel? Because you're one of those pioneers that took the leap from, you know, amateur wrestling to the world of mixed martial arts.
No, it makes me feel really good. I mean, I still have a number of athletes that come to my training facility, and that's what they tell me. Like they said, I started wrestling because of you. So it makes me really feel good. But I bash the part that it kind of amuses me at times, though, because I have been around as long as I have. Most people still only know me because of, you know, my what I've done in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. But actually, that's such a small part of what my background is in terms of, you know, I've been an amateur wrestler ever since 1969. I won my first national title in 1972.
Wow.
And how old are you, Ariel?
I'm 25.
Yeah. So think about when I tell people that, or I've done interviews, I say I've been terrorizing for decades in different parts. I mean, I've traveled to every state in the United States. I've done something in every state in the United States. I've traveled to every country that's ever had a wrestling program, and some that don't even exist anymore, when there used to be an East Germany, to see the Iron Curtain, to see the Berlin Wall when it was being guarded. Wasn't to keep people out, but it was to keep people in. So I've had quite the education over the vast decades. So, I mean, it's one day I'll end up writing that book. Matter of fact, I got a number of stories already put together from being on the road, and whether it be from my amateur wrestling career, the freestyle wrestling, the Greco-Roman wrestling, the collegiate aspect, the high school aspect, you know. But it's too much to put into one book. I'm just going to just refer to it as Beast Tales, just various stories, and, you know, put a few hundred pages together and just let one go out, and then it'll just be Beast Tales 2 and 3 and whatever else. Because when I do a lot of seminars, people that are intrigued, because I'll tell them a couple little insightful type stories, and they're like, wow, they're like, Iron Curtain, they're like, that's something we learned in history,
right?
You know, and stuff like that. Or fact is that during the first part of my freestyle and Greco-Roman career, I was still part of the Cold War movement, where you got the Soviet Union, who is threatening, you know, world power and nuclear power and the United States, but nobody's pushing the buttons, but they're trying to show world dominance now through athletics, and that's where the Olympic Games through quite a few different Olympic Games. That's the way that the countries, they would have a ceasefire. They pull that peace treaty so that the games could take place. Classic example, Adolf Hitler in the Olympic Games right there was trying to build his super race of blonde hair, blue eyes, and all of a sudden you got a black man by the name of Jesse Owens who goes out there and just destroys this myth of what he's trying to build. So it's you know, for me to be part of that Cold War era and be a part of a U.S. team to beat the Russians after about 18 years of dominance by the Russians. I mean, these are moments in time that will live with me forever.
And I'm sure you have a lot of stories from your pro wrestling career as well, the crazy world of wrestling. You were in the WWF. And also, a lot of people might not remember this, but you were actually the NWA heavyweight champion right before the first TNA show. And then for whatever reason, you had to vacate the title. And then Ken Shamrock won it on their inaugural show. What happened with that situation? How come you weren't signed to TNA to defend your belt on their first show?
Well, I mean, just to make a long story short, they did contact me for that. But, I mean, there was a time when I used to keep my schedule right up on my website. And I was already committed to doing a pay-per-view for King of the Cage. It had been on my schedule for some time. but for whatever reason, their ticket sales were slumped or something like that, and they thought that they needed to do a heavyweight title defense right from the get-go. And I told these guys, I said, I'm not available for that particular Wednesday night. That's when they were doing all their Wednesday night pay-per-views. I said, I can't do it that Wednesday night. I said, but I'm available the Wednesday after. The Wednesday after that, and the Wednesday after that. I said, but that particular one, I said, I gave my word already. I signed the contract. I gave my word. I said, I need to fulfill my obligations. Mm-hmm. And so basically, I ended up being stripped of the title and belt.
Did they ever?
Those are one of those things that if, that of course, hindsight is 20/20. If I had that moment to relive, I would not have sent back the belt.
Really?
I would have kept the belt, and I'll say, sure, if you don't want to be a champion, fine. You send somebody here to come and take this belt from me now.
So you actually sent it back to them?
Yes, I did.
Oh, man, that sucks. So did they even acknowledge? I can't remember now.
No,
they didn't.
No. It's literally, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, for all intents and purposes, I'm still the heavyweight champion because I didn't lose it to anybody. Matter of fact, I was used.
Let's get a Kurt Angle versus Dan Severin unification bout.
Oh, I would love something like that. Matter of fact, if you want to go back into the old history books here just a little bit, there already has been a Kurt Angle versus Dan Severin amateur wrestling match.
How'd that go?
Took place decades ago.
What was the outcome of that one?
Let's put it this way. My record is still unblemished.
Oh, really? Interesting. All right, we'll have to ask Kurt that the next time we speak to him.
He won't even remember it, and I didn't remember it until it was brought to my attention. And but I forget how many years and or decades ago that probably took place right there.
When
like I said, that.
You look back on your wrestling career, the time in WWF. Is that a fond memory for you? Sort of like how you look back on the UFC days.
Well, I mean, it's I'd say I have kind of mixed emotions about WWE right there. I mean, in the beginning, I was used correctly, but at the same token, then something happened, which I don't know what exactly happened right there. But I think they were a little bit nervous about putting any kind of straps or belts on me and stuff like that because of the contract that I signed. It was pretty much a very loose format to where I could work for literally for anybody. I mean, at the time, WWF, now known as WWE. I mean, when I was working for the WWF, I could work for anybody, including their arch rival, WCW.
Really?
Because I did not have any kind of control mechanisms on me, but at the same token, the professional world is got a very unique cast of characters that are involved with it, and I mean every aspect, not just the talent, but everything from the talent to production to your creative teams to the ownerships themselves of the various promotions. Sometimes some of these people, they live in that world of fantasy so long, they soon forget where does fantasy end and in reality begin. And again, I address that to all aspects of that particular business. I swear, the longer I've been around professional wrestling, the less I understand it, because it does not even follow some of the most basic fundamentals of business 101.
You have an example of that? Because you always hear so much of how wacky this world is, but is there something that you're sort of alluding to and to how weird some of the people involved are?
Oh, I mean, there's sometimes there's different. I mean, to really pull out one particular aspect, I mean, it might hear it in the next minute or two, but I mean, you'll have certain either storylines or characters that come to life, or an angle that comes out between this whether it be this tag team or this singles type bout that none of the general population would ever understand. But maybe a couple guys up in the office, they're just getting a little chuckle, yuck-yucks, about. And I'm like, that's when you really start missing the boat of what the business is really all about. And that's, like I said, that's some stuff that I've seen at different times. And it just, the thing about professional wrestling, I mean, which a lot of people are boggled by, I always tell people I've been hurt far worse in my professional wrestling career than I have been in my no holds barred and mixed martial arts career. And people are like, well, how can that be? I said, well, I said, the aspect, but why that is, I said, in a fight, mixed martial arts type of match, all I have to do is go out there and get results. Now, in professional wrestling, you're putting on an entertainment product, and your body is going to go into your partner is, it's not an opponent that you have, but you basically have someone else out there that you're putting on this entertainment product there. So you got to end up putting your body into his hands and hope that he knows what to do with your body, because if he screws up, it's not him who gets hurt. It's you who gets hurt. And there was a point in time when I was going to these various house shows that somebody got hurt at every single house show. It got to the point that, and I walked into the locker room, I'm looking around thinking, I wonder which one of you guys are going to get hurt tonight. Because I'm not going to get hurt, because I don't trust any of you guys. It may be a lackluster of a match because I don't trust any of you guys to put my body into your hands. And I've seen a number of guys get hurt.
I take it you don't watch wrestling as much as when you were involved in that world now.
Not as I really don't watch much television. Period.
Right.
No. I mean, I never was a big boob tube watcher, and now because of so many more channels and avenues and what I call overall media overdose here in society in general, between people have got some sort of media always running, whether it's they got an iPod hanging on, MP3 players, iPods, whatever the newest things that are coming out, computers, laptops, it just, I swear most people they don't know how to live without that stuff.
Yes.
And you waste so many hours of your life. And I've kind of boiled down to, I categorize people as two different categories. There are those who will be sitting on the sidelines, and they will watch life pass them by. And the second category is, there are those who are the engagers. They engage the game. And then to me, it's like, I've always been an engager. I was kind of ironic because, I'm in my training facility here in Coldwater. I've got, like four or five different athletes that stay here and train here on a year-round type basis. Guys kind of interchange them, but it seems like I always have at least four or five guys that are here at all times. And a couple of them were like, they saw my stash of scrapbooks, and they were thumbing through a couple of these scrapbooks right there. And the one was reading from 1984 how I had to change my schedule on because I had such a busy schedule going. I'm thinking, sure hasn't changed much here, Dan. And a couple of decades later, you're still. But I said, I like my life. I mean, there are a lot of people that end up getting a job and they hate their job. And they'll never do anything about that. They'll simply endure it. I like what I do, and that's where I don't look at it as a job. I look at it as this has been a career choice, and every day is something new I either speak to, whether it be over a phone or via internet, emails going back and forth. I mean, I've been self-employed ever since the 1992 Olympics.
That's the way to go, self-employed. And before I let you go, I just got to ask you. You were actually a part of probably one of my top three favorite movies of all time. Of course, I'm talking about Rudy. A very small part, but you were involved in it. In a few words or less, if you could just tell me what the experience like working on Rudy and how you actually got the part.
Well, how I ended up getting the part was they could not use current NCAA collegiate athletes just because of what the rules were stated. So basically they were calling around to all these various colleges trying to find former football players. Well, a buddy of mine worked at a college as a football coach, and he contacted me up because I had actually played semi-pro football for part of one season when they were hurting for some athletes. And so basically, as long as you're a big athletic-looking type guy, you end up getting put on there. Like I said, just a very small part. All it was basically an extra. But to practically live down in the South Bend, Indiana area for almost 3 months while they were doing the shooting and stuff like that, it was great to be a part of it. But then also Rudy, I may not know the justice of pronunciation of the last name, Rudy Rudiger.
Rudiger.
Rudiger, who the movie was based upon, he was a big amateur wrestler. He actually had three other brothers that ended up playing like roles like of assistant coaches and stuff like that. They actually even run their own amateur wrestling tournament. The funny part is here you have these different stars that were in that movie, and there is Rudy and the other brothers. They're gathering around me, and we're just talking amateur wrestling. And I got other, there's other guys like, well, who's that with the, you know, the movie staff and stuff like that? And they're referring to me because I was like, I was somebody in the amateur wrestling world for what I had accomplished there. So we were just talking amateur wrestling stuff. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then when I finally did see the movie, I didn't really know all the context of what it was about. But then to finally see it afterwards, it's one of those inspiration type of movies that I'm really glad that I was a part of, because that's how I look at myself right now. Is I continue to inspire young athletes and even the middle-aged athletes to continue to go out there to do something. Not that they may engage in competition, but I've had a lot of middle-aged men just say, "Man, you're still my role model." I, not that I want to climb into a cage and thump up on somebody. I've added this to my life or that to my life, and now they're getting more quality. So that makes me feel good knowing that I'm still an example in different ways.
Well, Dan, you're clearly you inspire a lot of people, whoever you might meet, and definitely leaving your imprint on the world of combat sports. It's been great talking with you. Some amazing stories, and like I said at the top, probably could have gone another hour of asking you about your time.
I'll say that area. If they want to, if some of your listeners want to learn more about what Dan Severn is all about, if they want to simply go to danseven.com, they can see all the things that I do in terms of I do a lot of speaking engagements to high schools and junior highs, talking about the importance of education. I have a teaching certificate from Arizona State University. I sign up for substitute teaching every fall. And I substitute on a number of days at various schools inside of Branch County. And I'm kind of like the celebrity substitute teacher. I have no problems with lending the students, but the feedback that the administration offices have received on me is the fact that I engage the kids. I actually get them to kickstart that brain. So maybe for the first time, but I get them engaged. And that's what they like about the fact that most substitute teachers, they'll just sit in there and say, "Well, read this and answer the questions," and they'll sit on their butts like a bump on a log for the rest of the time. So I like what I do and what I'm involved with, and I'm still trying to make impressions, whether they be inside of a cage or in a classroom.